You should celebrate yourself every day, but some days you should celebrate with jewelry. Whether you want to commemorate an unforgettable moment or just bring some added sparkle to your collection, Blue Nile can offer you expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com today and experience the ease and convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com. BlueNile.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This is a podcast from The Times, sports newspaper of the year.
Hello and welcome to the game. I hope you've had a good festive period. It says Christmas here, but of course I like to keep the show secular. With most of Europe taking on a well-earned rest through this rotten weather, you idiosyncratic Brits are plowing on with even more football. We'll cover as much of it as we can in this slightly different edition of the game. And I'm sure you're wondering, who is we? Well, I'm Gabriel Marcotti, and I am joined by Rory Smith and Peter Lansley, two hardy souls who never go on holiday. All right, a slightly different format this week. We're going to look back before we look forward. And we're going to start at Old Trafford. Now, I just quickly want to get a sense from you guys. It's +7 now, the lead between United over City. This time last year, they were level on points. Matt Dickinson made the point that the title race isn't over yet. I'm guessing we're all on board with this. Yes, Lansley? Not over?
Not over, no. I mean, absolutely. We're at the stage United will be going back into the Champions League. It'll be a bit tougher come February, March than it was walking through their group stage of Europe. And what if Van Persie got injured? That's the thing that worries me.
Well, if they time it right, Van Persie will get injured just as Rooney returns, and they won't miss a beat. Roy, I want to get from you, okay, because as I was watching this, and by the way, I am convinced that the Premier League's broadcast partners, Sky and ESPN, have somehow been instructed to big things up in a way that they didn't do 4 or 5 years ago. I just kept hearing him say over and over again, what a fantastic game, blah, what a brilliant game. Was this a good game, or was this really a game that was exciting because it was kind of like one giant car crash filled with individual errors and a very contentious refereeing decision that we're going to get to in a minute?
Well, I guess that depends on what you want in an exciting game of football, doesn't it? For some people, it's timing is goals, it's drama, it's not knowing what's going to happen. But for others, I guess it's more to do with the technical level of ability. And I think that the Premier League has a lot of one this year and not quite so much of the other. I think it's obviously fascinating to watch. It's enthralling. I don't think the title race is over. I find it bizarre that people want to say the title race is over in December. Why would any of us want that? Why is that a good thing? But I think you're right. I think there's not a huge degree of quality throughout the league, to be honest. And I think that's been shown in a lot of United's come from behind victories. That there's a lot of defensive errors. It all looks a bit messy, a bit slapdash. Then Van Persie, Lionel, or Hernandez in this case, scores a couple, saves their bacon, and they move on for the next week. But no, there's not a huge amount of quality, certainly defensively.
Lansley, am I being a snob for even suggesting that? And if I can just lay out to you my case a little bit. Hey, we know Newcastle can play good football. We've seen them play good football. But they go into this game without Cheick Tiote, without Yohan Cabaye, without Hatem Ben Arfa, with poor old Colaccini, who I thought looked really tired and unfit. You've got Perch in there. You've got Williamson in there. You've got all this yuckiness. I mean, it's not really realistic to expect them to play at their best, given that some of the more skillful players are out. And you can make the same point, of course, for United with Young out and Rooney out. So is this, I mean, leaving aside, we all agree it's exciting, but this wasn't the highest quality game, but we've seen the Premier League deliver better games this year, right? Or am I wrong?
It just depends on your criteria. I mean, you're a lover of La Liga and Serie A, are you not? And I'm sure their top games are much more, you know, chess-like, etc.
No, but I don't need a chess-like game, Lansley. I need good players who pass the ball to each other and don't make mistakes. I mean, I've seen Manchester United play very well sometimes. I thought they played very well against Sunderland, for example. And I've seen City play very well, and I've seen Arsenal play very well. It's not just that. I just think, like, I thought United and Newcastle made more mistakes in this game than they normally make.
Well, I remember seeing Reading win in similar fashion or even crazier fashion at Reading. And the truth of it is, the back half of United's team is not title-winning standard. Rio Ferdinand's getting old. Johnny Evans isn't anywhere near Vidic, of course. The goalkeeper, compared with Van der Sar, is not in the same league. The fullbacks are rash. Evra's getting older. Raphael is, you know, just makes mistakes every game. Carrick lacks pace. So the back half of the team is just not up to United standard. On the other hand, the top end of the engine is as good as it's ever been, isn't it? And I think Ferguson has just said, in the greatest United traditions, let's just score more than the opposition. Now, I know that's aesthetically not very pleasing, and people can say, you know, you don't deserve to win titles on that. But come on, it's really, really exciting, and it's the best of attacking football I think you're going to see anywhere.
I think Pete's absolutely right on that. I think the defence isn't good enough to win the league, and the question is whether the attack is good enough to win the league, and covers for the fact that the defence isn't good enough to win the league. But the other thing that I think is really interesting about this United team is its ability to come back from the dead, which they've now done. That's eight times they've done it now after Newcastle in the league. They've conceded first and gone on to win. Which seems that the sort of the universal truth in football seems to be that if you do that, at some point you'll get found out. But with United, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. Just teams take the lead and sit there, take all their strikers off, and expect to lose. And it just, the more they do it, the more they're going to be able to do it. So that's a pattern I think we can expect to see for the rest of the season.
Now I want to get on to this wonderfully contentious episode. Which seemed really bizarre. Now, I watched the game through the Magic satellite dish, and when I saw Simpson's shot and Papi Cisse, I thought clearly offside, and so Johnny Evans has to come across, and he deflects it into the goal, and I thought, aha, Cisse's offside because he's interfering with play. He's interfering with his opponent, Johnny Evans, by his presence. He's possibly blocking David De Gea's sight line and whatever else. So I tweeted that, and then I noticed that Graham Poole, who I happen to like, but even though many people don't, he tweeted, oh no, Dean got the decision right. So I spoke to him on the phone, and he gave me his explanation, which kind of left me to the conclusion that, first of all, he knows the rules better than I do, and he stays on top of them. But basically, it has to do with the latest IFAB interpretation, whereby at the time of Simpson's shot, Cisse might have been interfering with play. He might have been blocking De Gea's sight line and whatever else. However, the dynamic changes. When Evans touches the ball, he's not blocking anybody's sight line. And that's kind of what's relevant there. It's almost as if the dynamic of the play changes. You've moved on to a different incident, and those are the rules. And bizarrely, if Evans hadn't touched the ball and the ball had gone straight into the back of the net, then the goal might have been disallowed. I'm just curious, you know, does this make sense to you, Lance? Because it seems to me like if this is the rule, this is the way the rules are interpreted right now, these are the guidelines that are given to referees. They don't really make sense. I mean, leaving aside whether, you know, Dean obviously interpreted it correctly, but if this is it, then maybe it needs to be tweaked again.
Well, I think maybe it does need clarifying further. But in this instance, I mean, Simpson shot. Cisse was not in the goalkeeper's line of vision when that shot was And if Cisse is tangling with Johnny Evans, even if Johnny Evans has done the first tug on Cisse's shirt, the fact is, Evans is aware that his player's there. He's, you know, one of his faults. He wasn't completely sure where the rest of his back line was behind him. And he's troubled by Cisse's presence. So if that's not interfering, then what on earth is?
Rory, you're on board with the Lanzi explanation?
I am, yeah. I think Mike Dean got the rule right, but the rule itself is stupid. And I think there's loads of rules like that. And the whole interpretation of the offside rule has been massively overcomplicated by everyone's desire to have loads of different bodies examining it. And I feel sorry for referees. With me and you differ on referees, Gab. I think that their job is difficult already, and it's made harder by a succession of idiotic rules, and that's one of them. How on earth is a referee meant to process all that information in a split second? Do you know what I mean? With an angry Scottish pensioner shouting at him. It's completely ridiculous, and something must be done, etc.
All right, you brought up the angry Scottish pensioner. I should need to remind you that his birthday's coming up, so a bit more respect, please, for the winningest coach in the history of English football. Lanzi, I want to ask you, in light of, obviously, Sir Alex was very upset. What surprised me was he seemed upset at the time, and then he seemed to get angrier after halftime when he came back out. He seemed to be shouting at, like, the other assistant and the fourth official.
That's what old people do.
I think you're being a bit over the top. It's not just old people. I think you'll find there's plenty of young managers in the Premier League who get angry and wound up and shout at officials. Sometimes players do as well, Rory, and they're even younger. Lanzi, since Rory isn't showing too much respect for Sir Alex and his right to give officials an earful, he wasn't charged, which means what he did was okay, right, Lanzi?
No, it's not okay at all.
That's what I'm asking.
It's scandalous, it's hypocritical, it's inconsistent, and he needs not one book, but a volume, a library thrown at him for this behaviour.
Maybe St. George's Library. all right, let's move on now. As I said, we're doing things a bit differently this week, so we're just going to look at some of the games that are coming up this weekend and some of the talking points. Sunderland and Spurs. Now, Martin O'Neill's turned things around a little bit in his last few outings. There's no question this seems to be a streaky Sunderland. Are you expecting spending from Martin in January, or is it the kind of thing where Ellis Short might say, oh, look, O'Neill, you were competing before, and yeah, we were going to give you money when you kept losing, but now that you've won the last few games, there's no need to give you money?
No, there's no question that Sunderland think they need to go into the market. And although O'Neill might consider January not the best time to spend, you know, summer, you've got the 3 months. Everyone knows summer's a better time for value, a better time to avoid panic signings. There's no doubt that Sunderland will look to spend, and, you know, two or three players are here, you know, might well be coming in January.
Positions? What positions?
Down the middle of the pitch, possibly.
But in the callback Cattermole domain,
more creativity with a bit more authority, central midfield, a second striker, and, you know, obviously if Fletcher's injured, you need someone proven who can step in there, and at centre back to back up what they've got there.
What's wrong with Stéphane Sessegnon? Does he smell or something?
I think he's rated. I think he's done really.
So he buys somebody else who plays the same position.
Yeah,
he's a 1 in 5 player. Sessegnon's brilliant when he fancies it, but you can't rely on him nearly enough. Even if he was a 1 in 3 player, it'd be all right. But I saw him against Fulham this year. He was absolutely superb. He scored a beauty. Kept pulling the ball down out of the sky. You watched him and you thought, that's the player who PSG spent all that money on, who Arsenal were linked with. And then you see him sort of a week later, and he's just completely anonymous, doesn't fancy it.
All right, from one creative player to another. In fact, you could say it's his brother from another mother. Gareth Bale, a hat-trick at the weekend. had a few wobbles earlier. Should Spurs fans be getting excited, or should they be reminded that, A, who the opponent was, and we'll be getting to your beloved Villa in a moment, but or B, that kind of like these were sort of all counterattacking goals when the game was decided, and he really has a lot more to give, Lansley?
Well, let's just stand back and pay due credit to the man, because he was brilliant and he's fantastic to watch, and his influence on the way Spurs play is increasing as we go along. The freedom that, well, it was started by Redknapp obviously, but Villas-Boas isn't going to stop, is bringing the best out of him. He looks very happy, so let's enjoy the man, enjoy the moment. I don't think they were just counter-attacking goals. I saw the game, and Spurs could have been four up by half-time. That they weren't was, you know, due to Guzan's brilliance and some good fortune. And then, obviously, Villa feel like they have to come out a bit, and then Spurs just go into the spaces, counter-attack brilliantly, and who better to come in off the line than Bale? And his finishing, he didn't have that many chances. I think it was probably four goal attempts, and the other one was a 30-yarder going towards the top corner that was tipped over. So no, he's brilliant, and Spurs are making the most out of him and building their team around him, so they should.
Roy, moving on to Merseyside, Everton host Chelsea this weekend. I'm struck by the fact that people were suggesting the wheels were going to come off without Mara and Fellaini. I know you watched Everton against Wigan, maybe a bit fortunate there, but it's really not been a problem, has it? Or has it?
No, not really. I think against the sorts of sides they've played in the two games that Fellaini's been banned since the Stoke nastiness, they haven't really needed him. What Moyes has got now is a squad that's able to cope and adapt and flex, even if the key players, the Fellainis and Marias, aren't there. Stephen Pienaar was excellent against Wigan. He looks like he's getting back to what he was in his first spell at Everton before the rather pointless move to Spurs.
Meanwhile, Chelsea are on a slight mini revival, perhaps. If they win their game in hand, they're 1 point behind City. Are you going to give all the credit to Rafa? And I'm asking you because I kind of suspect what Rory's going to say.
I think Rafa Benitez does deserve a lot of credit. I think, you know, it might have been the most unpopular appointment in the history of Chelsea Football Club. And I don't think it was inspired. I think it went against a lot of logic. But he has done superbly. You know, tightening them up is what everyone threw at him. He'll be good at that. But he does seem to have somehow liberated, taken the shackles off. He's playing two out of the three sort of number 10s. And then getting a bit more energy, a bit more dynamism from the form of Victor Moses and giving Moses his chance. And that seems to have been a better balance. When I first watched Chelsea under Benitez, they seemed in such a rush to get to the ball to Torres that it looked almost long ball at times. But slowly they're adapting to that. They're realising when the moment is right, then yes, go early. Torres' runs are improving, and of course you get the odd goal, even if it was, you know, against the third best team in Denmark, and all of a sudden, you know, confidence starts to increase. He played poorly against Leeds, I saw that game, but then he gets a goal at the end. It keeps his confidence up, he keeps his run going. And I heard him on the radio yesterday, Benitez, talking about, you know, we can talk in Spanish, we can have our moments. He does seem to have got into Torres' sight line, doesn't he, and got some of their rapport. He's built on that, he's used that. And Chelsea overall, I can't see them challenging for the title, but yeah, top four now does look banked, doesn't it?
Rory, it's very difficult. Neither one of us has much insight into what Roman Abramovich is thinking sort of inside his head, although I know many people do pretend like they know what he's going to do. But viewed from afar, it seems to me that Chelsea have a few issues to address here. The Lampard situation, Romeo out the rest of the season. Do you bring in another striker? It looks as if Sturridge is going to go, obviously, but you know, Torres doesn't really like having other people there cramping his style. If you had to guess, what is the club going to do in January, A, and B, is how much input, if any, is Rafa going to have?
Okay, so I'll answer B first. I think the way it works is that Benitez kind of gets to say to Emanalo quite subtly, maybe we should do this, maybe we could do that, this player's available, etc. I think whether the club then listened to Rafa's suggestions, I have no idea. I think they probably take them on board, but the decision is made by Abramovich and Emanalo.
So I could email Emanalo and tell him what I think Chelsea should do as well, and he'll file it away with Rafa's suggestions.
Yeah, I mean, I think Rafa's suggestions might carry a little bit more weight than yours, but only a little bit, Gab. Only a little bit.
I think a tiny bit, yeah. But he's only won one more Champions League title than I have.
In terms of January, that's true. That's very true. In terms of January, I think the management of Chelsea would like them to sign a defensive midfielder and another striker, but someone who was kind of conspicuously a second-choice striker. Whether the ownership agree with that, I'm not sure. There seems to be kind of a debate going on in terms of whether they should bring back the loan players, Lukaku and McEachran, whether they should invest in the squad a bit more. The Lampard thing I find baffling. I don't think Lampard will leave in January. I think Lampard will see out the season. And to be honest, I can understand why Chelsea, the club, not the manager, are keen not to renew his contract beyond the end of the season. Because at some point, Lampard, like Terry, like Cole, like Gerrard at Liverpool, will have to be let go.
Here's my easy Lampard solution, since he has an IQ of 160-odd and he's clearly more intelligent than most people involved at Chelsea Football Club, is you go to him and you say, listen, we will give you a job here, some kind of executive role if you're ready to semi-retire and take a big pay cut. If not, why don't you go somewhere else and then come back? It'll be waiting for you because you obviously care about this club and you can show it by taking less money to be here. Just my two pence worth of suggestions. Moving on to Queen's Park Rangers and Liverpool. My buddy Raphael Honigstein tweeted that he saw Robert Green walking across the A40 after this game, which I thought was rather bizarre. I don't know if it had to do with the way he kept goal, but we're all assuming here, Rory, that Harry Redknapp is going to buy because that's what Harry Redknapp does. I've kind of argued that I don't think his squad is quite that bad and maybe he just needs to tweak. But what do you reckon? What should he do and what will he do?
I agree with you. I think if you look at QPR's squad, it's not as bad as, to be honest, quite a lot of the other ones in the Premier League. It's not the quality of players that they're missing. It's maybe the personality. What should he do? I think they need a better quality central defender. I think they need a striker. I think Redknapp, he sort of mentioned in that Harry way where he kind of starts off by saying, yeah, you know, we need a couple of bodies, and then he ends up sort of saying he wants to sign 9 players. he sort of intimated 1 and 4 is his kind of ideal.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number 1 in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I think if you got two, a decent striker and a proper central defender, I think they'd probably be okay, QPR.
Hey, Lansley, I'm going to ask you because you're probably more of a neutral here, but It seems to me that with Liverpool, it's one step forward, two steps back. I can't quite figure this team out. They were horrible against Villa, and then they get a win, and then they lose. And is this team actually improving? I mean, you really don't have a whole... Unlike most of the times, you really could care less about Liverpool one way or another. So I'm coming to you for an
honest... They were my second favourite team when I was a kid.
Oh, you too? There's another one!
That's why I got my job on the Times.
Damn Reds!
We all need a connection, Gab. You know this.
No, seriously. I want your take, Lansley. Is this working? Because this is Shelvey and it seems to me like the way he plays, like I could see the point if you had young Gerrard in there, maybe making runs in the box and actually shooting on goal and scoring some goals, taking some of the pressure off Suarez. He doesn't have that. He's got Shelvey, who, you know, is still Shelvey. Just everything.
I know. I think Gerrard's powers are much on the wane. I think I'm seeing people go past him like he's not there, and just watching the match of the day highlights from Wednesday, and I think it was Ryan Shotton getting away from him down the right, and it took Gerrard about 2 seconds to turn and realise he was beaten, and you know, and Villa were doing the same to him. Barry Bannon was just skating away from him, and I don't want to crucify Gerrard because he is and has been a brilliant player, but creatively his passing is still brilliant. His shooting can be excellent. His leadership, his authority. I think he's a great player. But like we were saying about Lampard, and I think it's come earlier for Gerrard, I think his powers are so much on the wane. But I think Liverpool and Rodgers are still playing as if he's the Gerrard of 3 years ago, and he ain't. Now, I think Liverpool, the passing game that they've reintroduced is two huge steps forward. But there's not the depth of talent in there. And it's, I don't know, they lack a sort of... When I say physicality, I'm not trying to turn them into Everton or Stoke City, but, you know, is Suarez not a number 10? I know he likes to play on the shoulder of the last defender, but I think they need someone ahead of him so he can buzz around him. And, of course, Sturridge isn't that type of player.
Right.
I think there's a big transition going on that's going to take a while to solve.
Rory, what's the thinking with Sturridge? Because I kind of agree. He's not that kind of player. When he plays wide, I don't think he's particularly good. He's something of, he certainly has a reputation as a bit of a bad egg, and not really a team player. But what does Roger see in him?
Well, I mean, it's just, you know, they've got this great scouting team in at Liverpool, and they've, you know, they've really unearthed a gem, haven't they? They've gone and paid market price for an England international. No, look, I for some reason, because of comments I made about Brendan Rodgers being smug on a previous edition of this podcast, which I would say is not a criticism, it's just an objective fact. I've got this reputation now of hating Brendan Rodgers. I don't. I think Rodgers is a good manager. I think he is. I think he's slightly. He's tried to change things both too quickly and too slowly. This idea, as Pete says, that they've reintroduced the passing game. They weren't exactly managed by John Beck beforehand. Do you know what I mean? They weren't awful to watch under Dalglish. Even under Hodgson, they weren't that bad. They were a bit more direct, but they weren't kind of. It's not like these players had never passed a ball before. I think the problem that I have with Liverpool is there is a callowness to the team. They look a bit sort of flimsy, and against Stoke, that's always going to sort of cause you problems.
They're playing QPR next.
Yeah, well, but even so, you look at most teams in the Premier League are pretty big, and there's just something a bit sort of lightweight about Liverpool. I agree with Pete, I've got to admit. I think that... I don't know. I can understand that Rodgers' argument that they will be inconsistent because they are sort of trying to reintroduce a philosophy. They're changing things around a bit. But what I don't understand at all about some of the poor performance in recent weeks is why are they not pressing? Why is there no energy? That is inexcusable for any team, especially a team whose style is meant to be about pressing. Okay. They're not pressing the ball. In terms of Sturridge, I think he's an uninspiring signing because we all kind of know what he can do. He's okay. He's technically quite good. He does have a reputation for being difficult, but I can see why they're signing him. He can play either as an out and out nine, or he can play wide. And I think with him, Sterling and Suarez kind of buzzing around the front three, or Berini when he's back fit, I think Liverpool will have a decent strike for. So I can understand why they've signed him. I think there probably is better value out there, and I agree. I think they need a different type of approach. Then good managers are pragmatic managers, are adaptable managers who are prepared to say, right, do you know what, this doesn't work. work in this situation. We need to do something else. And Rodgers doesn't appear to be able to do that yet. He may yet improve.
As I'm presenting, I can throw this in before we move on. The reason that Liverpool aren't pressing and don't have much energy might have something to do with the fact that it's not a very big squad, and Liverpool have already played 31 games this season, which is a lot, as well as the fact that I think of their five summer signings, only one was in the squad of 18. That was Joe Allen, and he was on the bench. I don't think that's a very good situation to be in, and some of that's beyond Rodgers' control.
I really disagree with that, Gab. Liverpool, they are playing as if under instruction not to press. When I've watched Liverpool a couple of times recently, there's no, oh, I'm too tired to make it over there, or I played on Wednesday so I can't make that run. They are playing as if they are such a talented, the old Real Madrid or something, that they don't need to go and press. And that's almost under instruction. You watch Joe Allen and Gerrard, there's no pressing in there. And I think I don't think you can have that in the English game.
Well, and the other thing, I've got to make two more points on this. One is that I agree with you, the squad is short. There's no question about that. They will strengthen. That is partly Rodgers' fault. He came in, and I mean, the Dempsey thing shouldn't sort of kind of run along forever because it gets boring. But he appeared to have one attacking target in mind in the summer, and that was Clint Dempsey. And when he didn't get him, there was no one else on the list. I think that is criminally negligent for any manager to only have one target, no alternatives. You're right about the summer signings. You have to wonder who then signed Nouri Sahin for $5 million a year on £5 million fee for a loan with no deal to sign him. Who signed Asaidi, who Rodgers doesn't appear to rate? I think he looks like quite a good player, Asaidi, certainly as a substitute, but Rodgers doesn't seem to like him. Obviously, Joe Allen's come in and Barini's injured, so they're the two definite sort of Rodgers signings. But there doesn't appear to have been a great amount of sense in the summer in strengthening what wasn't a great squad. And the other thing is, if you're not going to press, especially somewhere like Stoke, play your 6'5" centre-half and Jamie Carragher. People who can head the ball out. Don't play Adder and Sturkle against Walters and Kenwyn Jones. Put Sebastian Coates in there, who's technically not brilliant, but is a lot taller than either Sturkle or Adder. That's what I mean. I think Rodgers has his way, and he's not prepared to deviate from it, even when it's actually not for Liverpool's benefit.
How surprising that Rory Smith should stick up for the Uruguayan giant. Moving on to Arsenal and Newcastle. Also, I like the way he called them Coates instead of Coates.
It is Coates.
Very cool. Arsenal, you know, the sky was falling. Now they have a game in hand. It's against West Ham, but it's at the Emirates. They win it. They're joint fourth. Lansley, again, you're a neutral here. What is the problem? If this is what Arsenal are like when they bite the big one, when they start playing well, then there should be no problem whatsoever, right? And they should comfortably be in the top three.
Or, of course, he doesn't know what he's doing. The polarity of opinions over Arsene Wenger just gets hysterical. It gets ridiculous.
But what's Lansley's opinion?
Yeah, well, I tell you what. When they drew 0-0 at Aston Villa and everyone turned on him, and that was the start of absolute crises, wasn't it? Because he took off a forward and put on a holding midfielder. And some, about 50 of the crowd, turned on him. And it got worse and worse, and they lost a couple of games. Ridiculous. Because in that situation, that was a good point for a team who were chasing third or fourth place. And now that they've gone and won two or three games and lucked out slightly at Wigan, but won it, they are what they are. They deserve to be battling for fourth, maybe even third place. They're still playing wonderful football. They still lack ruthlessness. It's the same as it has been for a long time. But I tell you what, in people like Jack Wilshere, they've got someone better than they've ever had before. And he's only just coming back.
Wait, did you say Jack Wilshere is better than anything they've ever had before?
He did say that, yeah.
Do I need to send, like, sort of, what, Thierry Henry to your house?
No, but...
Patrick Vieira as well?
Yeah, positionally.
You look Patrick Vieira in the eye, Liam Brady, and tell him that Jack Wilshere is better than yeah. anything Liam Brady's ever done?
Cliff Baston?
Seriously.
Willie Young. No, Gab, the point I'm trying to make is that, as an attacking midfielder, as someone who breaks from that position, of his type, I'm saying Jack Wilshere is as good as anyone I've seen in Premier League history for Arsenal.
Okay, Premier League history only goes back 20 years, which is different than saying he's better than anything that's ever happened before.
Yeah, Lee, not really.
There's something a bit Pol Potty about this whole Premier League history thing. 1992, do you know what I mean? It's not, like, just refer to it as Division 1.
Yeah, let's not go there. We've covered that ground many times. But I have to ask about Mr. Dembaba. Can you? I've tried to get a straight answer to this from George, and I find myself more and more confused. Just to wrap this up, why does the guy have a contract with a £7 million release clause, and why hasn't this been sorted out before? Given that the manager has an 8-year contract or whatever the hell he has, and how big a loss would it be if he did go and left £7 million in his place?
It's a very good question. I don't understand. Well, look, I understand why they put the release clause in Barr's contract initially, because if you remember when they signed him, he was a risk. He'd failed the medical at Everton. There'd been some question over him at Stoke before he went to West Ham.
But how does that protect you? If you bought a crock player, how does a guy having a release clause protect you?
Well, that I don't know, but...
So why did they do it?
Well, no, because they'd have thought at that point that £7 million might not be a bad price to get for Barr, because he was a risk.
So he wanted the release clause.
Beg your pardon, Pete.
Sorry, threw in there, but they got him for free.
For free. So I think that when they signed him, the £7 million clause wasn't that stupid.
Yeah.
That they've not sorted it out is completely mystifying. And I know, and Pardew said the other day, didn't he, that possibly yesterday, I kind of lose track of time over Christmas, but he said that's something they're going to have to sort out, or they will have to sell him. Barr will sign a new contract. They can't have this hanging over them again and again. It can't be sort of every transfer window. If someone says, you know, Demba Barr is going to walk away for £7 million, it's almost suicidal now. Why they've not sorted it out, why they gave Pardew an 8-year contract, I don't know, but why they've not sorted it out is baffling.
Alright, we've reached our statutory limit on Newcastle talk on any podcast that George Culkin is not on, so we need to move on to some quick hits. Plenty of speculation that Wesley Sneijder is on his way to Spurs. Rory, leaving aside his enormous, nearly $200,000 a week contract, does AVB really need little Wes?
I don't quite see how he fits in. I've got to admit, I think he prefers to play at a slightly slower pace. Sneijder, he's a brilliant footballer. I'm not questioning that for a minute, but I don't necessarily know if he fits into Villas-Boas' ideal system. That said, the most impressive thing about Villas-Boas this season is that he has abandoned his favoured 4-3-3 with a rotating six in the midfield to sort of adopt a system that suits Spurs' players. So if he's been a bit more pragmatic than he was very dogmatic at Chelsea. That was part of the problem. If he's changed that a little bit, could get Sneijder, and I don't see Levy getting close to Sneijder's wages.
Yeah, I think they need Sneijder like a fish needs a bicycle, and I'm also not totally sold on the fact that this Adebayor-Defoe partnership works, or he's going to stick with it longer terms. 39 fans have apparently been banned from the Stadium of Light for that awful crime of persistent standing. Peter, do you have a common sense solution here?
No, I'm afraid I don't, because if you let 39 people stand, then you might have 39,000 people standing, and you have to be consistent. I think they should bring those 39 fans, sit them down in the Stadium of Light, have a chat with them, and tell them they can stand up at halftime.
Ooh. Roberto Mancini has said his strikers need to be more clinical. Is he right, or should he just stop complaining?
I think he's got a point. They're not taking the chances, City. They're creating probably enough to score more than they are, but there does seem to be something slightly lacking, whether Aguero, Tevez are a little bit sort of off colour. Dzeko's obviously in and out of the side. Balotelli's Balotelli. I know we're not allowed to criticise him because you get a very angry dab. I think Mancini needs to do something to sort out City's form. Because you said earlier that you've seen them play well. I haven't seen City play well this season. I've got to admit, that's not to say they haven't, just that I haven't seen them play well. There's something lacking about City at the moment, and I think that is what is sort of hamstringing them in the title race. It's more than just the strikers. It's the entire team. They seem slightly uncertain of what they're meant to be doing. I suspect that's Mancini's fault for changing the system constantly throughout the first 3 months of the season. He doesn't seem convinced by his team. I know everyone says that Aguero and Tevez are a natural strike force. I don't think they are. I think they're too similar. There are greater problems at Manchester City than the fact that they're not taking their chances.
Peter, I waxed lyrical about Paul Lambert's young 3-5-2 side, but then they go and they repay me by conceding 12 goals in 2 games. Is it really that bad?
It has been really that bad over Christmas. Yes, in those two games, I watched them both, and Tottenham could have got eight as well. But overall, I think that system got worked out. I think teams just had, hang on a minute, Villa are going three at the back. How should we do that? Okay, you get in behind the wing backs, you etc. etc. They worked out how to play against them. Overall, it's not that bad. Villa have found a unity this season that I haven't seen for what, 2.5-3 years. The young players are playing together, playing for each other, but what they need in January now is some of that middle experience, some of the sort of, well, get Gabby Agbonlahor and people like that back. Ron Vlaar has been a big miss, and then buy a couple of people of mid-20s who don't want 80,000 a week to stroll around. If they can get that, I think Villa will be fine.
Yeah, and then, apart from Vlaar, I'm not sure how many of the injured guys he really wants back. Henning Berg has been sacked as Blackburn Rovers after 57 days in charge. And Sean O'Driscoll, my mate, he's been let go by Nottingham Forest. Rory, we don't normally look at the Championship, but I think both these stories are just too good. Your thoughts? Oh, and by the way, can you also throw something in there and tell me if all these jokey references to Shebby Singh, is there been a slight tinge of xenophobia in there? And if instead of Shebby Singh, his name was Sam Smith and he had 80 England caps, people might not treat him like some kind of fool and buffoon?
I don't think it's where he's from or his name. I think it's a lack of experience, that there's a suspicion in probably in football in general of outsiders, of people who can, the idea that someone who's not been kind of a regular fixture on the scene can possibly have a valid opinion, which I think is wrong. That I think is more potent with Singh than where he's from. He is obviously a Malaysian international, so it's not like he's not some sort of buffoon. I think he has been written off as one unfairly. Sacking Berg, to be honest, he lost 5 of 6. It looked like it wasn't working. One win in 10 is not enough. It's probably a bit sort of quick, a bit too sort of enthusiastic to bite the bullet or fire the bullet. And the problem is that they don't seem to know who they want to replace him. It looks like the team's going to be picked for Barnsley tomorrow by a mixture of Gary Bowyer and Colin Hendry at the academy, and a guy called Juden Ali, who is an ex-Arsenal trainee, who has had some sort of coaching career in India, but not ever with a senior side. Kevin McDonald, I think, will go in as number 2, which is a great appointment. He's a well-respected coach, as Kevin McDonald, as people know. The problem seems to be that they don't have an idea of who they want to be manager, and that's not a great plan. Forrest, I feel sorry for Sean O'Driscoll. I think he's a good manager, but I do think McLeish has got a better chance of getting them up.
Who'd you rather have managed? Your quick bonus question for you: who'd you rather have managed Liverpool for you, Shebby Singh or Steve Keane?
Shebby Singh.
There you go. Darren Gibson and Carlton Cole have had their cards overturned and will not be facing a ban. Do you have sympathy for 34-year-old referee Anthony Taylor? And also, why did the FA say that they will only provide, quote, written reasons at a later date? How long does it take to write up your reasons for overturning the red card? Are you just wanting to bury it because it makes one of your referees look bad?
No, I think they're probably on their Christmas holidays. I don't actually think the written reasons are that important. It's obvious he got them wrong, didn't he? And I actually think it'll be a logistical thing, and they won't be able to process it until everyone's back in the office.
But, what do you have to process? Presumably, they sat around and decided. They decided to overturn these cards. Presumably told Anthony Taylor why he was wrong, why he made a mistake.
I don't think the written reasons matter too much. I think it's just obvious they got them wrong, and I do think it's logistical. But sympathy for the guy, yes, I do have. He's a young referee. I think once he'd got the Carlton Cole one wrong, I think he succumbed to the, you know what Upton's Park like, they're on your back, and, well, the good, close, intense crowd, and I think he went and levelled it up. He was wrong on both counts. He's a young referee. Has he had lots of bad games? I don't know. He had a bad day. Let's see if he can level it out.
Yeah, I actually agree. I think Anthony, among the younger referees, I think Anthony Taylor's is generally a pretty good referee, and I think he's growing. I think Oliver's a better referee among the young ones, but I think these two guys should be getting more playing time, more bigger games, I think.
Gab, one for you before we go. There's plenty of reports that Cristiano Ronaldo has turned down a new deal at the Bernabeu and will leave on a Bosman in 2015. Are we to believe this?
Well, we can believe the part that he turned down a new deal because his people have said as much, but that doesn't mean that they won't continue to negotiate. whether he'll leave on a Bosman, I find it remarkable. I think there's enough people who want to sign him, and and if he, what he's not going to do is just count down his contract for 2 years and have the press up his backside. So I think we can safely rule that out. But it's a very interesting story that's unfolding at the Bernabeu, and I think it also underscores really the dangers when you have a manager, a star player, four or five other really important players, all of whom have the same agent and are represented by the same person. Not only is it a huge conflict of interest, obviously, but it also, I think, really potentially weakens the club, and it leaves them vulnerable to something like this, where, you know, where Mourinho, Cristiano, you know, maybe Pepe, Di Maria, all these guys could just all leave as like a package and go somewhere else, and that would really hurt Real Madrid.
And would it be to Old Trafford?
I think there's very, very little chance of that. I think the I think the Glazers, you know, God bless them, but I don't think they would want to hand over so much power to Jorge Mendes. I mean, you're going from Sir Alex and Gil, who built this club over 30 years, and then you're kind of saying, all right, everything we've built, we're just going to hand all everything over to Jorge Mendes and Mourinho, who don't really have a record of permanence at any one club. So, no. That's all we've got time for this week. It's been fun, and it's been real. Come find us on Twitter to share your thoughts. Or, as so many of you do every week, you can email us at gamepodcast@thetimes.co.uk. You can go to thetimes.co.uk. You'll find news, web chats, blogs, analysis, all that good stuff. We're going to be back next year. Thanks for sticking with us during the holidays. And until next time, bye-bye.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.